accession number 16801, Reel 4.
Mr. Proctor, Reel 4.
They laid their arms and walked away. About an hour later, a guard appeared and said to Tom, "Up, march." And I was left alone. Now, after about 3 hours, as Tom hadn't returned, I decided that I'd better make a move. And whilst the German soldiers were engaged on other things, I slipped away through the brush. And I walked and crawled, I would think something region of about 3/4 of an hour. Only to be met by a band of lousy, scruffy, angry Cretans, armed to the teeth. Amongst that group were also two Marines, British Marines, and they signalled to me, "Come." I joined up with them. I finished up being rearmed amongst them, passing arms about, and we sneaked away to the hills. Now, during this period, these guerrillas was in contact with a British officer who joined the party, never spoke to me or the Marines. He was dressed similar to them, but there's something about him that made him different. I can only assume that he was a political officer, because at a later stage of our encirclement, he was gone. Now, for several days, we harassed troops travelling along the tracks and roads, shooting them up and running. And then we was engaged by a large number of paratroopers and German troops. The Marines were badly wounded and virtually shot to death.
How did that happen?
Through the fire from the Germans. I didn't even know the names.
Had they told you how they joined this group?
No.
Or anything about it?
We didn't bother. We didn't bother about things of niceties like that. They were like myself, looking for a way out. We could talk about it if we got to Alex.
Didn't you get any information from them whatsoever?
No. Oh. Apart from they were Marines, I think one was John, and I can't remember the other man's name, to be honest. I've thought about this a great deal since. I'd hoped that I could have passed this information on, but as John, I didn't know, and who could find John? I mean, there's probably several Johns. The Marines, the Marine Commandos was fighting their way out anyway. Now,
how effective was their guerrilla action against the German communications?
I would say good, from what took place very soon. When this, they were effective, you said. Effective, but a rabble. A law unto themselves. I would go as far as to say that they didn't care a great deal about us, but there was safety in numbers. I'm not being unkind when I say that they would shoot at the drop of a hat without assessing the situation surrounding us to our front and so forth. On this particular day, the Germans engaged us with heavy fire and mortars. We were hiding in the rocks, returning fire, but it was of substance to stop the advance. Then I heard a megaphone voice in English calling from the German side. If you are amongst the crowd of guerrillas, Corporal Proctor, surrender now. I looked at the Marines, who were badly wounded. I looked at the guerrillas, whose strength was reduced to 2 by death from shooting of the enemy. And I called out, I have got 2 wounded Marines here. They will be taken care of, came the reply. We're coming forward. Which is what happened. About 12 men came forward with this officer with a sheaf of papers, and this is important here, a sheaf of papers in his hands. He stopped about 5 yards and I stood up. He called out. He said, the war is over for you. You have all fought honourably. Surrender. I went forward and I spoke to him. I said, there are 2 Marines back there badly wounded. He gave instructions for the medics to go forward. He said, are there any guerrillas there? I said, yes, also wounded. I saw them pick up the Marines. I heard them shoot the guerrillas. End of story. He said, here I have in my hands, first of all, he said to me, your Colonel Anderson, is back in Alex. I said, is he? I said, well, I'm going that way too. Laughter. He said, we have your regimental papers in our hands. We know where you all are. Or the ones that are still on the island. And he went down the list. D Company, Corporal Proctor. That's you, isn't it? I said, it is. Ab March. And I was taken to an establishment where there were several, I won't say thousands, probably several hundred prisoners of war of various troops, Australians, New Zealand, British, etc. I was interrogated again, for which I subsequently got a smack in the mouth for my pains.
Why?
For being rude. This German intelligence officer knew exactly company, captain of my company, Captain Bardwell. He made a joke of this. He said he was wounded in the rear, in the buttocks, and was last seen lying across a donkey. Well, that's also in there, being withdrawn.
Also in the regimental history.
Yes. I said, well, I'm not fussed about that. I said, the Navy will come for me. Navy? He says, we've sank the Navy. I said, really? I said, they'll come. And he said, you're an arrogant pig. And I said, I'm a British soldier. And if I can escape from here, I'll escape. Let's get that clear now. For which I received a smack in the mouth for. Which is, you know, out. I joined the paddock with the rabble. And it was a bloody rabble. Hungry men, defeated men, are angry men. You know what I mean? Comradeship was reasonable within the ranks of people you knew, if you understand me. New Zealand's kept themselves to themselves, the Aussies kept themselves to themselves, and the British. Unfortunately, I didn't meet any Argyles. I did at a later point, because we was all taken to a point to wait by the roadside. And then in the distance came another batch of prisoners of war, for which there were several scatterings of Argyles amongst them, including our RSM. Not a happy man. None of them was. Eyes were downed. Feet were dragging. Let's face it. It wasn't a happy scene at all. And from there, we were taken to the docks. And a ship took us to Athens. For where we came ashore to German movie tone cameras rolling. And not treated too well. Now, a New Zealand's, but he could have been an Australian, fell as he came down the gangplank. And this German officer ran forward and kicked him in the stomach, was kicking him to the head. Till I ran down the gangplank and headbutted him. He drew his pistol. I thought, oh. But he was held by a senior voice from the distance. Senior officer was standing. The cameras were rolling, so they didn't want to see anything like that. However, two guards came across to me and not very gentle with me. Kicked me in the arse, buttered me with the rifles to get into the ranks. From there, we marched to Irakulan. Not to it, sorry, apologies. Salonika, to a cavalry barracks, and subsequently, at a later stage, we entrained there for a trip to Germany. Now, not the pleasantest of rides. Overcrowding, they didn't give a damn. Overcrowding, no food, no toilet facilities, until we reached Belgrade, or the outskirts of. Now at that point, we detrained, only to find the platform crowded with Red Cross personnel, senior German officers, civilians, and crowds standing on the bridge, watching. We was all ordered to strip, run under the showers, go to the loo, which consists of a trench, a deep trench, with a pole down the centre. You cocked your backside over it and did whatever was necessary. And picked up your clothes, proceeded then to the Red Cross table, where we got two small tins of meat, couple of packets of biscuits. We got a drink of water from a ladle, move on, ladle, and back onto the train. And then from there we proceeded to Luckenwalde in Germany, where things brightened up a little bit. Interrogation was by German soldiers again. Most of them, I presume, come from civilian life. Clerks, etc. and so forth. And then we were sort of banded. And my prisoner of war number was 12121, which was Whitehall's old number, if you remember. One of my colleagues was number 2, number 3 and number 4 and so forth. A batch of us went from Luckenwald to a place called Rudo, which came under the category of a 3D, same as 4F, 3D, 4C was various areas where British prisoners of war were kept.
Stalag 3D.
Stalag 3D. That was my first prisoner of war camp. And I then met again our RSM, who joined us. But by this time, there was himself, a regimental sergeant major from the Queen's Regiment, or equivalent to CSM anyway, or whatever of those ranks, who became the RSM, or became senior to our RSM, by service, I presume, because he took command of the camp. Any information was fed through him to our RSM, if you understand what I mean. Would you switch off a moment, please? Camp in Rudo was hard, harsh, lack of food, no clothing. Tropical kit we were still wearing. We was now into the early, early winter days. We obviously knew about German weather and the coldness of, and had we retained those clothing for long, we was either going to be buried in there or whatever. But a batch of clothing came from the French, of all things. Culottes, which is a slip-on boot with a white cloth to wrap round your feet. Baggy trousers, like the French soldier army wears, and jackets. I think 171 was on my tunic. It was quite some time before Red Cross, or Red Cross parcels, became into being. Quite some time. I don't want to be unkind here, but I would say at least 3 months. I would say it would be mid-January, then by then. Yes, we got the bowl of ersatz soup, kartoffels and sauerkraut, about 300 grams of black bread, a small pat of butter, that was your ration. The Germans themselves said that was their ration. Well, I'm sure it wasn't, but they weren't much better fed than we was, strange enough. And then they decided that we should have to work to earn that food. And we was grouped up into commandos, small commando units, 20 men to a batch, and taken out to work in the fields, clear fields and laid railway lines down into tubs, and with tubs on, and move the earth into it and move it from A to B. Pathetic. This went on for some time. In the meantime, Red Cross parcels appeared on the scene. There was quite a bit of panic because the Germans was not going to issue them. But the RSM of the camp and our RSM spoke to the commandant, who subsequently said about issuing Red Cross parcels. Well, you can understand from the food contents of those parcels, men were sick from lack of food. Then 2 days later came British battle dresses and boots, overcoats, for which we was all kitted out. So by February we was universally dressed and looked like British soldiers. I bet prisoners as well. And for about 6 or 7 months we walked about dressed in battle dress till they decided to put a big diamond on your centre of our back, on our greatcoat, to the public to know that we were prisoners of war. It was the first sign if anybody escaped. The second thing that came along later for me was to have a big F painted on my back and on my greatcoat, which meant Flieger, escapee, but that was another story. We moved from camp to camp. I eventually went to one called 520. I then finished up in another camp, which didn't have a name, but it was in Plowen area, Upper Silesia, a place called Zwickau, mining area. Our job was to unload coal wagons into a marshalling yard, you know, because it was a big junction where trains came and replenished and then moved off and picked up troop trains and you name it, whatever. I didn't like the place because it looked an ideal spot for bombers. We stuck it for some time. 95% of the camp was Irish. Now, for some strange reason, they kept the Irish away from the British. I can't prove this, but I believe to be used for propaganda purposes at the later stage. I can only prove that those camps, or our camp, was cleared of the Irish back to Luckenbold area, because I corresponded with one, and I have documentary evidence upstairs of an internal prisoner of war. So I know he was there, but what happened to them later? They could have fallen foul to the Russians, or they could have been, the camp could have been bombed and killed. I've no idea. I did write in due course of time when I came home to Ireland to a particular colleague, but I never received a reply. In the meantime, one had oneself to look after. We moved into several camps from there. Railway marshalling yards seemed to be a favourite for Germans to put British soldiers, as if when the bombers came they would get hit as they got hit. Didn't work out quite that way. But it was at this time, time has gone on now of course, obviously, we're looking at 1944 now, I thought to myself, time to move on. I knew this was going to be belted, this place.
Is this Zwickau?
Beyond Zwickau. It's a funny little place, I can't think of the damn name.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
But it was in the Chemnitz, Plauen, Zwickau area. Because in due course of time, I flew home from Erfurt, which was the other side of Chemnitz, by about 70 miles. It's time to go. And I went. The first instance, I went the wrong way. I was going east. And it was when I heard the rumble of guns, and you could hear them, but I knew I was wrong somewhere. It was Russian guns I could hear.
So this was an individual escape attempt?
Yes, yes. I never went back into the pen again. I lived off the land. I stole some blue overalls, which I wore over my uniform. I could speak a reasonable amount of German to get me through where I wanted to go. And I turned about, living off, as I said, living off the land, raw potatoes, beets. There was some kind Germans who I got food from, who knew I was a prisoner of war, but they had their own problems. The war was coming fastly to a close from their point of view, if you understand me. This would be I was picked up, or for want of a better phrase, recaptured by the Americans. This followed the fact that I was sitting in a small wood watching the German army retreat, which gave me a great feeling. The village was full of flags, blankets white, flags white, etc. And then the great hour arrived. I stood in the road, and walking towards me, left and right side of the road, was Americans. Very theatrical, I thought. You know, this nonsense.
Pointing their guns in the air?
Yeah. Looking around, you know, alert, if you like to put it that way. We've seen the scene on the pictures many times. I'll often smile. And then came this damn big tank in the centre of the road. And ground to a stop. Incidentally, they had already dropped pamphlets and ordered the German people to put arms, etc., in the centre of the road. And this tank came along. And suddenly it stopped. And a voice called out and pointed. I presume that man down there, which was me. Who is he? What is he? Get him. About four Americans doubled forward, and as he got near to me, I think I remember saying, took you bloody long enough, didn't it, to get here? And this bloke called him, he speaks English, sir. So this chappy came down, and I undid my blue overtop trousers, slid them off. British soldier. He said, what's that you've got? I said, that's a Luger. My own personal protection. I said, it's near here why how I acquired it. I've got it. I said, I've also got a Browning. Small Browning. Oh, he said, you're well armed then. I said, yes, I am. I've needed to be. All right, he said, we haven't got time to talk here, have we? I said, no, we haven't. Follow us. And I followed him with his troops into the village, where they were rounding up the burgomaster and the local people, making them up to clear the rubble. First things I remember in that village was a big buck nigger, American, setting up his cooking equipment, and who kindly asked me if I'd like to eat. I said, yes, I would. But unfortunately, I couldn't. Steak, about 2 foot across, by about a foot wide. He said, get that into you. I said, I can't eat it. I nibbled it. I said,